This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast, episode 267, ranking Disney's post-Renaissance era. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties, because it's time to dive into today's episode. Hey there, animation addicts. I'm your host, Morgan Stradling.
And I am Chelsea Robson.
Chelsea, we just had a great episode a few episodes ago where we talked about, at length, the Disney Renaissance era. We had much to say. We could have gone on for quite a while. And now we are hitting the next phase of the Disney eras, which is the post-Renaissance age or era. And I thought it was really interesting because we've talked about, remember those books that are called They Drew As They Pleased?
Yes.
And it's supposed to be kind of like a history of the Disney animation films. And they're breaking them down into the eras so that way they can have multiple volumes so they could sell more, of course.
Of course. And why wouldn't they?
And then they're also doing it as a way to highlight the different artists. And we've talked about their interesting choices of eras and the way they want to break it down.
So naming.
They have the golden age, which we know, the musical years or the wartime era. Okay. The story checks out, you know, it lines with what we believe to be history. Then there's the late golden age.
Right.
Okay. We just call that the silver age. Then they call it the mid-century era, which is kind of like the 60s, 101 Dalmatian, Jungle Book, all that.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the early Renaissance, which we know as the Bronze Age or the Dark Ages. They don't want to go there. But this one, to be honest, I found the most peculiar because they're leading with the early Renaissance as one of their ages.
Mm-hmm.
So that would mean that there is then a Renaissance, right?
Right.
So you would think the next book in the series would be the Renaissance era, right? Or the Renaissance.
Right.
Age.
I would go along with that. Yeah.
Instead, they call this the new golden age because, again, they really don't want to make one era sound more important or special than the other. So
as if there were a dark age.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's just the
to have a Renaissance means that there was a
pre-Renaissance. Don't worry about it. But then why don't you call this one the Renaissance? Well, because in this, they consider this age to go from 1990 to 2020.
What?
What?
No.
Come on, Disney. I mean, you're already six volumes into this. What's another two? There are two very distinct ages after the Renaissance, and especially because they're releasing more and more books or more movies each year.
Right.
To warrant, naturally, that they're going to fall into different, you know, decades or eras. And it's when I saw that, I was just like, get out of town. Get out of here. Why would you do that? And it's funny because the animators or the artists that they highlight here are not even kind of the ones that you would think of. Like, okay, so if you're thinking of Renaissance artists to highlight, because basically there's
three or four artists, 2 to 4, that they're going to highlight, you know, uh-huh. that were really instrumental to this age. Who would you think?
What era are we talking about?
The Renaissance.
So for Renaissance,
true Renaissance,
I'm going to say, you know, during 1989 to 1999, and you're going to say Glenn Keane, Andrea Esteja, Eric Goldberg.
Yes.
Like, there's several of these guys that are like, these are the guys.
Yeah, they're not there. Nope, what? Not them. Yeah, so it's Joe Grant. No, Hans Bacher, Mike Gabriel,
Michael Giacomo.
Yeah.
Michael Giacomo?
He was the art director of Pocahontas and then Frozen.
Yeah.
So obviously cool, but just, huh? What? No, Glenn Keane? What? So, you know, it just kind of, from me looking at this book, I'm like, okay, you got something going on here. I don't understand why you wouldn't
highlight. You're trying to do this with.
Yeah, and just the fact that they're trying to lump it all together because it's just like, okay, the Renaissance is so good. You could have a book all on its own just about the Renaissance, which we had an episode all on its own just about the Renaissance. It was very long.
Yes.
And here we go. And we don't want to talk about the 2000s. That's just the redheaded stepchild. It's kind of like the Bronze Age, which we don't. It's the pre-Renaissance Age. OK, it's like, OK, you can come up. Why don't you just call it the pre-revival age? There's the pre-Renaissance, the Renaissance, the pre-revival, and the revival.
Yeah.
Cool. And then you get 2 new books out of it. It makes more sense to me. But no, anyways, this is a super long Morgan rant on why are you doing this, Disney? Come on. The new golden age did not last 30 years. Come on.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I feel like this is definitely an example of gaslighting. Like, all of these are equally
as
good.
All of these were the Renaissance. All of these were great.
There was never a time when anything was less great than the others.
Right. This is very 1984.
Right. So, I mean, I get it. You're a publicity spin artist. I get it, you know, but give yourself some respect here.
I mean, for this reason, and these books aren't necessarily true Disney historians. You know, you would hope Disney would do a good job because they have access to the archives. But it just goes to show that I can't trust Disney to do a good job representing the history of what happened here. That's why books like Disney War exist, because they show maybe the other side that we didn't see.
That was an amazing book, FYI.
And so I feel like if someone were to redo these books, it would be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily highlight the go from the artist perspective, although that's what they were going for. Like, hey, let's highlight all these amazing artists who were involved.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm more interested. And when I first got these, that's really what I thought they were. You know, it says the hidden art of Disney's. These are all the hidden art.
Mm-hmm.
The art you didn't really notice or whatnot. It's all, you know, concept art and stuff. But I'm craving more of a true history for each of the eras. And I think that would be really something cool if someone wanted to go ahead and do that.
Do you want to do that?
Not at this current point in time. So that's not the point. Sorry,
I got other stuff to do.
That was our mini couch discussion for our nerdy couch discussion episode, which is this one. Let's talk about this post-Renaissance era.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ow! You threw off my groove.
Started 1999. Ended 2009.
I have to say, I'm looking at all of these films, and I honestly think that this is the true Dark Age. Like, it's the, I'm looking at all of these, and I'm like, I've maybe watched some of these, maybe twice, only because of the podcast. And I resent it.
Saw it when it came out, and then saw it for the podcast.
Yes.
And we're done.
Yeah. And we're done. And I feel like the other, like from the Renaissance years, I've watched those an innumerable amount of times.
Right.
These, I'm just looking at and like, do I have to?
You
while
must.
On the other side, I was like, oh, don't make me choose. And now this one is like, oh, don't make me choose. Oh, mm-hmm. It's really, I think this is going to be more of a fight, not necessarily a fight, but a discussion on which one is like worse, because we definitely know which one's best out of these, but mm-hmm. oh, there's so many variations of bad that come
yep.
with these.
Yep. So let's talk.
Fantasia, I actually, as we've discussed before.
Fantasia 2000.
Sorry, you're right. Fantasia 2000. I personally enjoyed Fantasia 2000 more than I did the original Fantasia. And I know we differ on this. Like, we are completely mm-hmm. the opposite mm-hmm. on this.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I understand. And the reason for me is the fact that while I do appreciate and love classical music over the last like several months, really all I have been listening to is classical music just because it calms me. And there are times in life where I just need to be calmed. And this has been mm-hmm. great for that. But I think that as far as like creating a narrative and more of a script, I guess, to me, it felt shorter and therefore more palatable especially as a child. Like, I could get behind this one better. So that's what I say about Fantasia 2000. For you, go.
You know, Fantasia 2000, you know how much I love the original and just grew up watching that over and over and over again. And then this one, it just didn't do it for me. Yeah, it has new music and the animation is amazing and beautiful. It's just like Fantasia was what it was. And then trying to recreate it again, I didn't need it. And it just felt unnecessary, unwarranted. It pales in comparison to how cool the first one was and innovative. I just don't go back and watch this one ever. I have no need to watch this one.
Right. Wasn't this like a passion project for not Roy the brother, Roy the nephew? I feel like it was. I feel like I have a memory of him really pushing this. So maybe it was more of a nepotism side or a nostalgia for him. I don't know.
I also remember that Michael Eisner really wanted to include certain songs, and the directors and the artists were like, no. Like the Baccalaureate March that you hear at graduation. Oh, what's that called? He really wanted that. He thought that was just pop and circumstance. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
And he was just like, we got to have it. And everyone said, no. It's like, why? There's nothing to that. And he pushed it and he got his way. But, you know, so it just kind of shows that really there was a lot of butting heads happening.
Yeah.
Where directionally, maybe this wasn't what the higher ups and the directors and the artists, they weren't aligned and kind of in the end shows.
Yeah.
So going on, Dinosaur. This was technically the first CGI film for Walt Disney Animation Studios.
Yes. Dinosaur has so many issues. So many issues. While beautiful, and I feel like I remember they tried to do the same preview as what they did with The Lion King of like the opening sequence. Look at the egg. Mm-hmm. Follow it.
Yeah. Yes.
What an adventure this egg is going on. I loved our discussion about Dinosaur though. And if you go back into our archives, you go to rotoscopers.com/every episode ever, you can check out that. And I just remember we had a really great conversation about the details on why, like where it could have been better. And most of that, I think, had something to do with if they would have been able to add more of an element of abundance versus scarcity mentality and kind of like real reactions. But in the end, it really was just Land Before Time, but by Disney. So I think Don Bluth did it better.
Totally. Yes, absolutely. The Emperor's New Groove in 2000. So this is the first year where we have, Fantasia. There were two animated films released, Tarzan and Fantasia 2000. Then Dinosaur in 2000, we have two more. So they were really saying like, hey, we're having a summer release and a winter release. And we get Emperor's New Groove.
I love Emperor's New Groove. It has
who doesn't?
It has a storied past, which I find even more delectable than the movie itself. But the story is just fun, so quotable, so great. Love it.
Yeah, great characters, so funny. Just one of those films you want to go back to and watch because you know you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, and you can tell, like, even though the first two, I think you had a lot of people who had a vision of, I want this to be this for artistic sake. And then when it came down to it, that's how The Emperor's New Groove started out. But because things just weren't working, they were just like, screw it. Just make it funny. Go. And they just had a great, like, they threw it all together within like 6 months, which was insane. It was like, all right, just go. We'll have to make this last. Yeah, sure. All right, let's do that.
This movie's good. It didn't blow, you know, box office out of the way, although it wasn't a flop by any means. It made its money back and did pretty well. But we're starting to see there's a change happening. Mm-hmm. And we saw that at the latter part of the 90s, where they're just not going to be these as huge blockbusters as we were expecting, even though those movies were still great. But now at this point, it's like the Disney fatigue is really happening. People have wisened up to Disney, what they are now. They're not the Disney from the early 90s, so I can't go in expecting. And then, you know, even just the tone of this film is different, you know?
I think a lot of that has to do with, so there's the book Creativity Inc. by Ed Catmull. And when I read that, I was hit with exactly why that was. And you had all of these, when you compare, like, within Disney War, you could see all of the politics that were happening in the upper categories of the company, to like the C-suite.
Yeah.
And then you go down to what was happening as far as creativity wise. They really did not want to move into any kind of new and follow the creative vibe that was truly pushing forward. Like, they cut out John Lasseter. They did not want to have anything to do with Ed Catmull, and they did not want to have anything to do with this Pixar thing or computer animation. Like, they were really like, no, like, sitting on their laurels, I guess you could say. They were just going like, we're Disney, we can do no wrong. And originally I wanted to do this episode as kind of like the Pixar age, because this is really where Pixar was adding to the competition and showing. And this is one of those moments that's kind of in the same vein of a Don Bluth separating and creating competition to show where you can't sit on your laurels. You have to continuously push forward in creativity. And the exact same thing happened. The exact same principles happened. They were stuck on what they wanted to do. They didn't want to expand creatively in image wise. And so you had a couple people who were like, okay, we want to do something that aesthetically is different. And so they went branched off and created their own little thing, which ended up surpassing the giant as Disney had become. And I highly, highly recommend the book Creativity Inc. because, one, I don't think there's a better leadership book out there. It's one of my favorites that I've ever read. And I've read a lot of them. But as a history showing how this ebb and flow of really pride comes down to it, what happens when you don't want to step outside of yourself and step out of your comfort zone of what you'll inevitably fall. So that's my little rant on there as to why I think this was all happening.
It's a good one. We'll include a link in the show notes where you can check that out. Definitely, definitely worth listening to or reading. Excuse me.
Either one.
Yes, both available for all sort of learning types. Now we're going on to something that I was just so pumped for. I thought this was going to be it. It's going to be so good. Atlantis, the Lost Empire. Wah, wah. It did not live up to my expectations. And didn't. I knew it. And this kind of was, I would say, the first real disappointment. But it really was like, okay, Disney's just not what it used to be.
Yeah, and I felt sad about that because, like, the animation style was so cool. You had this princess girl that just looked so cool and could have been everything. So many elements that they had going for them. But they just, I think story was obviously where it, you know, for me, where everything falls apart. But it's just like, there was just so many conflicting things about this movie that just didn't work.
And yeah. We didn't even spend too much time on it.
That is where the disappointment comes in, where it's, I remember being excited for this movie and thinking, okay, we're coming back, Disney. We're coming back, right? But we didn't. It's okay.
We did not. We kind of came back for Lilo and Stitch 2002.
We did.
I think this one redeemed itself.
Yes.
And was different and fun and unique. And even the music in this one was a little different. They had Elvis soundtrack.
I love
for a lot of the songs, but then they also had a few original numbers that were Hawaiian inspired and esque. So that was cool. So it felt Disney, and they went back to the watercolor backgrounds that made it feel kind of like the old Disney film. The character designs are very different. I can't think of his name. It's on the tip of my tongue, but he's known for more of these female characters and these characters that kind of have more stout, you know, like hardiness to their designs. Chris Sanders. Yes. Mm-hmm. The director. If you look at his characters, you know, it's not the slim, super, super fit sort of female characters. They got bigger legs and it's nice. It's cool to see. And we saw that a lot in Lilo and Stitch, different design characters. And, but you know, it does have this weird element of the classical Hawaii with space aliens, you know, so does that, you know, typically will that work? You wouldn't think that it would, but it does work pretty well.
Yeah.
So this was the,
I think for me, I was so disappointed from Lost Empire that I really wasn't even giving this one the time of day at the time, mm-hmm. but going as I have seen it and I've enjoyed it, but it was like, I don't think I was able to give it as much love as it really deserves, because it really is a good movie. Yeah. And then we go into Treasure Planet, which once again, why were we so involved in space during these?
Well, Ron and John, the directors, really wanted this. They've been pushing for years. Treasure Island in space. And they just were pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. It never happened. They always got put on other projects. You know, they're too valuable for the studio. You know, whatever they touch kind of turns to gold.
Yeah.
And they did. And so finally they're like, okay, you can do your Treasure Island in space thing. And while it had a lot of interesting elements, for me, it just didn't come together. Now, I know that this is a cult classic now. And people love the character design, and it really does have a cult classic status. But at the time, it wasn't. And even for me, it's still not quite that. I'm not going to go out of my way to watch Treasure Planet.
I think another reason why I never really got into this is because I kind of felt like it was a ripoff of Titan A.E., which came out in 2000, which I was like, this is just weird. Like, why are they doing... I just don't get it. Because so Treasure Planet 2002, Titan A.E., I just felt like it was just a repeat of something that we've already seen. And Titan A.E. didn't really do very well. So I kind of grouped those together.
Yep. Then we have Brother Bear.
Oh, gosh, no.
Done yet, guys. We're heading down the slope of despair. And it, like I said, in 1985, it was the Black Cauldron. You know, when we hit 2005, that's again another something about the fives doesn't do well. So, Brother Bear, it's like, I don't even, what is there to say? Okay, he turns into the bear, and they have to figure their way out, and yada, yada, yada. They have a singer that's kind of supposed to be like Phil Collins, but someone else, you know?
Right.
And just a
sideshow Bob.
It's just like, what is cool about this film? What's interesting? What do I want? You know, this was the last traditionally animated film before the Florida studios. And at this point, you can really see these films are taking a hit from Pixar and all of the CGI films.
Yeah.
You know, not only are the CGI films just taking over, but Disney is not doing a good job with what they have to really hold their stake in the ground and say, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter that it's CGI. We can still do great animated films that are traditionally animated because we have story behind us.
There's elements of Brother Bear that are trying to lean into a couple different movies. You're trying to lean into the Tarzan. You're trying to lean into the mystical ancestor or something in the sky with Lion King. And like, there's just elements that they're trying to like pull from. I think when Pixar comes in at this point, they really do have, this was Pixar's era, and they really push forward because they wanted to define who they were. And Disney has become, well, we're following what we think is popular as opposed to what we are and who we want to be and defining themselves. And I think that this whole 10 years was, it's just kind of like, meh.
losing yourself in the face of new competition.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Woody and Buzz storyline, you know? The spaceman's coming around and you represent the old guard and the old ways. And how do you handle it? What do you do?
Yeah.
And can you survive or do you just sink and drown? So
and right now we're floundering.
Yeah, we're really floundering
we're
right
barely
now.
Barely holding
so,
on.
Home on the Range, 2004. You know, they said, hey, well, let's musicals used to work. Let's bring them back. So they brought back Alan Menken. And it's about, you know, these three cows that have to band together to save the farm from foreclosure. Like, oh, man. And it's just has Roseanne, who I don't know if she would be your choice of a lead.
Her voice
just being super
is,
compelling.
Her voice is a little like it kind of grates slightly.
Yes.
So I have no personal beef with Roseanne. Some of her stuff has been really funny, which I've appreciated. Some of her stuff, I'm just like, I'm not a fan. I go on a project by project
basis.
Roseanne
was something from the 80s, you know, mm-hmm. the heyday for her. And then we're bringing her back 20 years later.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how this, you know, really resonates.
But her voice in itself is its own thing. And so it's hard to place her in a new character. And also it kind of grates on a tonal level. That's kind of where I'm at when you're talking about voice actors, you know. At this point in time, I honestly had given up on Disney. And that makes me sad to say it, but I really had.
Yeah, I was still giving him a chance. This was the last one that I was like, we can do it, Disney. I'm going to go see ya.
I know.
We're going to save the farm. I mean, that's sad. This is kind of a metaphor for what was happening for the studio as for itself.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, this was the last ditch effort to save the farm, save 2D animation.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was the Save Disney campaign that Roy was doing at the time.
Right.
You know, just really upset that they were closing Walt's Pride and Joy, which was the animation division, you know.
Right.
They closed it to switch over to CGI. Sorry, if you can't beat them, join them. And so then we get Chicken Little in 2005. Just such a bad egg. I'm not even going to talk about it. If you want to, you can check out our Chicken Little episode. It was just rough.
Uh-huh.
But then
Me the Robinson.
It picks back up. So John Lasseter, this is the Pixar acquisition. Mm-hmm. John Lasseter becomes the head of both studios. And Pixar had hit after hit after hit. They knew what they were doing. They knew story. John Lasseter was one of the key players of the Pixar Brain Trust and directors of Pixar. He knew what he was doing. He was the kind of the new guy in animation. He comes and was able to save Meet the Robinsons.
Yeah.
To make it watchable and doable. And
not just watchable, it was very good. I have a very tender feeling when I think of Meet the Robinsons.
Yeah, I don't have a negative feeling. You know, if I just say, hey, Meet the Robinsons, positive or negative. Chicken Little, positive or negative. Home on the Range, positive or negative. Like, this is the first time in a while that it's positive.
Yeah.
So we're coming up. You know, this is the pre-revival. This would be probably the pre-revival.
Would this be
if you were to call that? Yeah. Yeah. All the rest is a nothing. That's no pre-revival, nothing. That's that's the fall, the downfall.
This is like going from Treasure Planet all the way to Chicken Little. It was just like having four black cauldrons in a row. Like, this is how bad it felt to me during this time period. And so I would kind of consider Meet the Robinsons maybe on level with The Great Mouse Detective, maybe. Kind of like okay, we're gonna start something new here.
Yep.
And then Bolt.
I agree. And then we have Bolt, and Bolt, you know, initially was called like American Dog or something.
Uh-huh.
They changed it, and I recently watched Bolt with my kids. They actually really like Bolt.
Huh.
It's okay. It's not quite Meet the Robinsons level, but it didn't do that well in the box office either. So yeah, I mean, Disney's trying, you know, they're kind of having success and not having success. And, you know, John Lasseter wasn't involved with these films from the very beginning, from inception, to really say like, to vet it. Like, this is a great idea, great concept. Mm-hmm. You know, he just had to come in and kind of fix what he could. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we will hit the revival era, starting with Princess and the Frog. And that brings back 2D animation. We're going to talk about that next time. But, you know, this is where we're left off for this post-Renaissance era.
Mm-hmm.
Or the true Disney Dark Ages, as Chelsea calls it. So let's rank these. There are 11 in total. So mine, number 11, Chicken Little, followed by Dinosaur, Fantasia 2000, Brother Bear, Atlantis the Lost Empire, Home on the Range. Then our top five, we have Bolt, Treasure Planet, Meet the Robinsons, Lilo and Stitch, and Emperor's New Groove. I'm honestly so shocked that I put Bolt so high.
I am as well.
But I think that's because the bottom is just so bad. Like, it really just does a huge cliff dive for the bottom six.
Yeah. So number 11, we got Brother Bear. Number 10, Bolt. Number 9, Fantasia. Number 8, Chicken Little. Number 7, Home on the Range. All right, we're picking up a little bit, if you can call it that. Number 6 is Treasure Planet. Number 5, Dinosaur. All right. Number 4, Atlantis. Number 3, Meet the Robinsons. Number 2, Lilo. And number 1, Emperor's New Groove.
Woot woot. Okay, so I did change mine after looking at this. I dropped Bolt 2 spaces.
Okay.
So Home on the Range and Atlantis are higher than Bolt. So.
Okay, there you go.
Let the record stand.
I agree with that they are higher than Bolt. But I just, like, Bolt is just, ugh. I have a hard time with, like, I just can't get through it.
I'd rather watch Brother Bear. I'd rather watch Bolt than Brother Bear.
Oh.
Any day of the week.
Yeah. That's where I'm at as well. Brother Bear, so. I can't get through it.
Oh, poor Brother Bear. We're sorry.
Chicken Little, even though, like, how is that?
I feel Chicken Little is my bottom of the bottom. That is just pathetic, embarrassing. I will never watch it again.
I think
I'm shocked
right.
That you have things above that.
I'm like I said when we were first talking about, like, I think our major problems with each other are going to be like, you even give that one even higher? What? you think there's something better than that?
We do agree on our top.
Yeah.
We have. The top three, our general consensus, Emperor's New Groove, Lilo and Stitch, Meet the Robinsons. Boom, boom, boom. Good, good, good.
Dinosaur. I mean, I could watch Dinosaur more than I can watch Brother Bear.
I think I just need to give Dinosaur another chance. When I think of it, it's just like, meh, boring. So
it's boring, yeah, but it's not bad.
Right. So let us know your thoughts. Are we completely wackadoo? We're off our rockers? Or do you agree with our rankings of the post-Renaissance age? We will be getting into our final age of Disney coming up in future episodes. We're going to be talking about the Disney revival era. Lots of really great films to talk about and a wide variety of films, which will be very good. So that's all that we have for today. Until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Hello. Recording.
I'm now recording.
Levels look good.
Hey, howdy, hey. That's me. I'm on a yo-yo.
Pippa. I don't like calling Pippa sometimes.
Am I your child? Is that?
I don't know. It's just I'm always talking
is that
to her.
How you
I'm
see
always talking
me?
To you. Definitely not. Oh, I'm tired now. I need to go lay down.
Okay.
Which is sad. You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.